Well, good morning. I thought there would be about six people interested in Durham, but maybe it's because of the lunch that's offered a little later. But anyway, Durham is one of our smallest classes of wheat grown in North America. It's a premium class. It carries probably a 50 to 70, 75 cent premium over hard spring wheat, which usually carries another 50 or 75 cent premium over hard winter wheat. It's grown in a very limited area in the U.S. You can see here in North Dakota, we actually have 510,000 hectares, which represents the largest area in the U.S. We do have bits of Durham grown in California and Arizona. We call it desert Durham. Those will be grown in the winter months. In the past, a lot of Durham was grown in the northeast part of North Dakota, but because of climate change or wetter environments, it's been chased more or less out of that part of the state. And I think it will have some impact on when we look at yield trends over the last few years as well. This is a trend in area planted to Durham, and if you look at that trend line, you'd say in 20 years no one will be talking about Durham in North Dakota. But nevertheless, you can see there's been a substantial reduction, and part of that I think has to do not with the fact that you get a premium for growing it, which you do, but with the fact that it's more difficult to meet the quality requirements of Durham, and you know, they just basically say it's not worth the effort. If we look at yield trend, that bottom line would be our Durham yield trend for the past, 45 years. One can see that Durham is pretty flat, and you see a lot of scatter. And if you look at the actually back out in here, we had yields were very similar to what we're seeing here. And I think this probably represents a time that we see a shift in cultivation from the northeast part of the state, which was better watered, etc., to the drier parts to avoid some of the issues that I'll talk about a little later with that wetter environment. And that line compares with the spring wheat, which you are seeing a substantially higher rate of yield increase in spring wheat. And of course, it's going to have probably a little better environment. I think we see a lot more turnover in varieties, and I think some of the quality requirements have delayed the adoption of newer, higher-yielding varieties. It's just really harder to breed a variety that meets all the requirements of the industry, as well as increase yield. So I took a tact in my presentation. Rather than looking at a yield gap, I'm looking at the gap in the use of best practices, because I make an assumption that if every grower is using best practices, we don't have a yield gap. But you know, I don't know if you'll agree with that. But anyway, that would be my take, and that's how I put this together. And so a couple of years ago, we carried out a survey to about 20% of the Durham growers, and we kind of wanted to compare what they are doing with what we would consider a best practice. And we really included what we call a sustainable practice, meaning that this would be what we would consider good for farmers for profitability, but also good for the sustainability of the farming system. And we have some pressures, I think, in the industry for the sustainability, because Durham is used by far fewer end users than spring wheat. And so you have big industries, the pasta producers, that are very concerned about the sustainability issue as well. So, you know, what is considered a best practice? And, you know, I guess I'll take most of the blame, as I decided what was the best practice. You know, I consulted with others, but it wasn't where we get everybody around the table, industry, others, and say, hey, this is, what do you think is the best practice? But let's just see where we are at with adoption of what I consider best practices, or what we consider best practices. First of all, rotation we think is good both for production and the environment, and we see that 72% are rotating their Durham fields with non-cereal crops. We see that 76% are using no-till. Again, I think think we think this is good for both the productivity as well as the environment. 78% are leaving the residue undisturbed, and again, we can see the benefits both for productivity as well as for the environment. I think here on use of certified seed, you know, I don't think that use of certified seed necessarily would improve yield consistently. I think there's data that suggests that certified seed does have some advantage in certain circumstances, but I think a farmer that does a good job of saving its own seed and keeping it in good quality and good condition, it's not going to be a negative as far as yield is concerned. But if you look at these data, it's somewhat of a concern that we see that certified seed use is only usually after three or more years is when they buy a new lot of certified seed. And I think part of that is that we don't have a rapid turnover in new varieties, and part of it is probably these are lower yielding environments and they're just hanging on to their seed. But again, I'm not sure that this would necessarily mean that we've given up yield. What about seed treatment? You know, again, this would be a practice that isn't always going to offer increased yield advantage, but we have about a third of the growers are putting on seed treatment, fungicide seed treatment every year. We've had a third that never use it, and then we have some that I think are adapting to whether the circumstance warrants it or not. So early planting, maybe that would lend itself to it, or if you're going back into a cereal system, maybe that would lend itself to being more likely to be profitable. As far as seeding rates, and I think our recommendation currently would be somewhere around 3.5 million would be an optimum. You can see that we have probably a third that are overseeding, and then we have maybe more than a third that are in that category where we probably could boost yield by adding a little additional seed. And then I think another concern would be, you know, what are they doing with regard to practices so they can delay the buildup of resistant weeds? And you can see that almost all growers had some kind of strategy in place, either rotating herbicides, rotating crops, using tank mixtures, and those kinds of things. And so we might pat ourselves on the back and say we're doing really good there, but I think as I look at this, I'm thinking maybe we need to have growers using all of those strategies in order for us to actually see the kind of delay that we're going to need into the future. You know, each one of these are going to help slow it down, but are probably not adequate in and of themselves. I think the other concern would be our big input would be nitrogen fertilizers, and there's a lot of concern about what happens to excess fertilizer in the environment and, you know, getting a nice return, and we've had some great discussions on that already today. So first of all, the question that we had asked the growers, are you using this N recommendation tool that we've developed at the university? And so this is using economic return to nitrogen applied. And I think my colleague in the soil fertility, he was a little bit disappointed when we got the result that only 3% were using this. You know, so the traditional recommendation is you take your yield goal times 2.5 pounds, and I think that, you know, this takes into account the price of fertilizer and the price of the grain and makes a lot more sense. But you can see that the adoption of that is very low, a little bit disappointing, to say the least. Increased use of soil sampling. I think this would be another thing that we'd say, well, at least this gives the farmer a tool to know where he's at with regard to soil fertility. And we see that 37% of the farmers are applying a fixed amount every year without regard to soil sampling or any other thing. So again, indicating that maybe there's some areas that we can tweak to improve sustainability and profitability and increase yield as well. You know, another factor that we're concerned about is we ought to put more of our nitrogen closer to the time when plant needs it. So a split application might be beneficial, and we see that only 4% are using a split application, and finally 18% are using variable rates, which I think we'd find in the eastern part of the state we'd see much higher adoption of this kind of technology, but not out there in the west. So I want to talk about a couple of About use of fungicides, we see 12% never apply a fungicide, 34% apply it whether they need it or not, or, you know, whether they think they need it or not. And then I think that what we would consider a best practice is that you really put on a fungicide when you need it. And we do have a disease forecasting model that's available. And again, I think my colleague in extension pathology was a little bit disappointed that only 14% are using it. Now, that doesn't mean that it's going to be right all the time, but it's another tool at least that they could use to help them in this process. So I want to talk about two of our kind of recent focus on research with regard to major problems in durum production in North Dakota. And the first would be Fusarium head blight. If you're not familiar with it, it's a disease of the grain. It starts out by residue, has the spores, and particularly if you go cereal on cereal and corn, it carries more spores than even our small grains. The head becomes susceptible during that flowering period when the anthers are extruded, and it can develop then further on in the head once it's become infected. And you know, you have both an issue of potential yield losses, but more commonly it's a quality issue where you actually have a mycotoxin affecting the cereal outside. So FDA has a food advisory limit of 1 part per million, and generally with small grains they accept that the elevator is at 2 parts per million because much of that is removed when they mill it. So the main issue then that we're concerned about would be this DON or deoxynivalenol or vomitoxin. And as I mentioned, that 2 parts per million is kind of the drop-dead limit or where you get significant discounts. And so our strategies would be resistant varieties and fungicides, and this is just showing you some data looking at a highly infested area of Fusarium head blight where we see that these varieties, which are not very exciting, right? I mean, when you get 16 parts per million, that's, you know, not going to be even used for animal feed, but compared to a variety that is highly susceptible, you can see that we start to see the reduction. If we put a bread wheat in there that had resistance, we'd probably be at this same level of infestation, maybe at the 5 or 6 level. So we still have a long way to go, but we do have, I think we have recommendations to get the most susceptible out. Then with regard to fungicide, there are a number of the triazoles are the only class that are really effective. And you know, here we see that Prezzaro, Carumba, Proline, these are giving a 43% reduction relative to Folicure, which is a much cheaper kind of generic now, tebuconazole. And so these are some of the recommendations. You're going to have to use a more expensive fungicide. And then we're looking at this question is, can we put it on twice and be able to get ahead of it? And so here's some data where we're looking at Prezzaro at early flowering. You can't put Prezzaro on again. You're only labeled to put it on once. And so we're coming back with Carumba, and we 4 or 5 days later, and it seems to be giving us some additional reduction. Is not particularly cheap option, but nevertheless might be something that's coming down the pipeline as a little bit later application. And then combining fungicide with varietal resistance, I think, is what we're really hoping for, and we can see that that's giving us some good reductions there. And then finally, I just want to talk about cadmium. It's an issue in durum. Unlike other small grains, it accumulates in durum. I think our current level is 2 micrograms per gram of durum, and I think the Europeans, they want to reduce it to 0.1. And we're concerned in North Dakota because we certainly have soils that are problematic. And I just want to show you that, you know, Canadians now have some varieties that they're using that have are resistant to the accumulation. This is showing you there nearly a 50% reduction in cadmium by the use of variety. Zinc also can help reduce it. And, you know, this last slide here, data slide, would show you that by putting some zinc chelate at the time of our fungicide application, we are able to reduce cadmium levels by about 30%. Probably not as much as we need, but we hope in the process of getting varieties that have resistance, that this will be at least a stopgap measure that can help in some of those areas where cadmium is really problematic. So I think I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you.